This weekend marks the official inauguration of the Pauline year, dedicated to the Apostle St. Paul to mark the 2000th anniversary of his birth. Pope Benedict will officially usher in the Pauline year at First Vespers in the Roman Basilica of St. Paul's outside the walls, on the eve of the solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul. Underlining the ecumenical nature of the commemoration, the ceremony will be attended by the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople, Bartholomew I, and by high-ranking representatives of other Christian denominations and communities. At the Vespers, the first door on the left of the Basilica, which is normally always kept closed, will be ceremonially opened and declared the Pauline door. Vatican Radio will broadcast live commentary in English of the Vespers, beginning at 6 p.m. Rome time on Saturday, and also of the Mass at 9:30 a.m. on Sunday morning in St. Peter's Basilica, during which the Pope will confer the pallia on the new Metropolitan Archbishops. Born Saul of Tarsus, St. Paul became one of the Church's foremost evangelizers after his dramatic conversion on the road to Damascus. And his letters are a primary source of information about the life of the early Christian Church. Paul's influence on Christian thinking, arguably, has been more significant than any other New Testament author. Well, to find out more about St. Paul's life and work, his personality, and his continuing relevance today, I turn to Dominican Father Jerome Murphy O'Connor, who's a New Testament professor at the École Biblique in Jerusalem. He's one of the world's most renowned scholars on the letters of St. Paul and the author of around half a dozen books on the Apostle's life and work. Father Jerome began by telling me what he sees as the main significance of this upcoming Pauline year.
The significance of the Pauline year will be to draw attention to the theologian of the New Testament, who is, in my view, the most relevant to the 21st century. That I understand his analysis of the world he had to change, the society that he had to convert, that is so accurate and so descriptive of our society that I feel very strongly that the solutions that he devised and which worked for him, that if we gave them a chance, they should work for us.
You said there that you feel that St. Paul is the most relevant to our modern age. Why is that?
Well, he sees society as characterized above all by divisions. On the macro level, nation against nation, different levels of society, and then individuals are separated from others by barriers of fear and hostility. And to me, that's a very accurate description of our world. And so that's what led Paul then to create the community that we call the church. He wasn't interested in saving individuals. Individuals were saved only as members of a body.
Great figures in the church in the centuries that followed, did he have most influence on?
The tragedy of Paul is that we have his letters and they were very influential. But once his personality disappeared, then the idealism of his community faded. Like the Pauline communities are extremely idealistic, whereas Matthew's community, for example, is a management community. There's a little bit for everyone and no cohesive vision. And Paul was simply, I think, a little too strong. Remember, Paul is criticized in one of the letters of St. Peter.
And in fact, St. Paul did fall out with people, didn't he? Like Barnabas, the disciple. What kind of personality did he have? Was he, shall we say, very uncompromising?
I think Paul was uncompromising. He also was extremely thin-skinned and tended to identify what he would consider insults to himself as insults to the gospel. He really identified so completely with his mission that he would have been extremely difficult to live with.
What we know about St. Paul comes from the Acts of the Apostles and his letters in the New Testament, yet there are inconsistencies and even contradictions between what he says in one and in the other. And of course, there is the fact that his authorship of several of these epistles is in doubt. Do you agree with that?
I don't fully agree with the consensus. Like the vast majority of scholars would say that 2 Thessalonians and Colossians and Ephesians were not written by Paul. Well, I think the first two were. I don't think Ephesians was written by Paul. In its present shape, it contains an older and lost letter, the letter to the Laodiceans. There are serious disagreements between the Acts of the Apostles and the Pauline letters. For example, in the Acts of the Apostles, Paul is forced to leave Damascus because he is threatened by Jews, whereas for Paul himself, he has to leave Damascus because he is threatened by the Nabataeans, which is historically correct. So when studying Paul or building up an image of the life of Paul, one must give absolute priority to the letters and treat Acts of the Apostles positively but critically.
Talking of criticism, St. Paul has been accused by some of being a misogynist because of what he wrote about the role of women in certain of his letters. Is that a fair criticism in your view?
No, I think it's completely wrong to think of Paul as a misogynist. That I would think he was perhaps the greatest promoter of women's ministry in the first century.
And when it comes to his theology, what do you believe are the most striking elements there? Could you elaborate for us?
The most striking element of Paul's theology is his concept of the church as the body of Christ. Now we, because of the divisiveness of the world in which we live, we tend to think of that as talking about cooperation, coordination. For Paul, it was much more profound. It was a matter of shared existence, that the arm and the leg belong to the same thing, and that is how they exist. So for Paul, we belong to one another. As he said, without love, I do not exist. And it is that relationship of love that constitutes the very existence of the body. And he calls that is the body of Christ, by which he means that the church is the physical presence of Christ in the world. If you want to know Christ, you act within the community. You don't go off on your own and make a retreat. And furthermore, for Paul, that church, the community, the body of Christ, he calls it Christ. He uses the word Christ both of the historical Jesus and of the community. And it is only when the community is truly Christ-like that it can use the first person singular. This is my body. Paul has a very varied but very consistent and radical theology.
When you say radical, what are you thinking of there in particular?
For Paul, there can be no Eucharist if the members of the community celebrating the Eucharist do not actually love one another. This is spelled out unambiguously in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. It's radical in the sense that this is a challenge to our churches, where people, the same people, go to the same Mass every day of the week and don't even bother to learn each other's names. For Paul, there could be no Eucharist in that type of community.
Right, we've talked quite a lot about Paul and his teaching, his theology, but when it comes to his life, of course, he was first and foremost a missionary and he did a lot of travelling, he courted a lot of danger. What do you think are some of the most significant incidents in this very action-packed life that he led?
Well, he was in and out of jail on a regular basis. He was shipwrecked and he was extremely lucky in that he survived, because no ship would divert to pick up a drowning man. It would be extremely difficult, and they would be long past him by the time they could turn around. So he must have drifted on a current that brought him to one of the many islands in the Aegean, and then he was very lucky that he hit an easy beach, not the bottom of a cliff, so that he must have been terrified every time he traveled by boat. But if it was necessary to bring the gospel, then that's what he did.
He certainly didn't flinch, did he, or turn
back?
No,
he was extremely courageous. And when you think that each of his journey would be about 20,000 miles, that he must have been a very tough, fit man.
It's been pointed out that Paul's letters are full of expositions of what Christians should believe and how they should live, and not so much about the life and teachings of Jesus. Why do you believe this was so?
I think that Paul had a very detailed knowledge of the historical Jesus. Remember, he spent 2 weeks with Peter in Jerusalem shortly after his conversion, and they certainly didn't waste time talking about the weather or the illnesses of mother-in-law. And they would have talked about Jesus, and Paul refers more than 20 times to words of Jesus, and he also had a very precise knowledge of the behavior of Jesus. There were two aspects of the personality of Jesus that struck him particularly, and one was his steadfastness, his fidelity. As Paul says, our lives are yes and no. His life was an enduring yes. Now that sort of person, single-minded, can be rather cold. But the other aspect that Paul finds very significant is that Jesus was emotional. His tenderness, his compassion, his love for people. These are factors that he mentions several times. Now Paul did all that. He spoke about Jesus when he was with these people in their conversion visit. That's when he would have spoken about the historic of Jesus. The letters all deal with particular problems, and so that he simply refers to Jesus, his teaching, his personality, as something that they already know well.
Paul did, of course, in his time have many enemies and detractors, didn't he? Was it, as we were saying earlier, perhaps because of his somewhat abrasive character?
Well, Paul had enemies in the Jewish wing of the church. You see, there were those, led by James, for example, who believed that Gentiles should become Jews, that is, accept circumcision, in order to become Christians. Paul objected violently to that. But he nonetheless accepted Jews as members of his community. And he eventually turned completely against the law. Remember, when he arrives in Jerusalem for what he feared might be his last visit, James tells him, you tell everyone not to obey the law of Moses or to follow the customs. So that for many Jewish Christians, Paul would have been the ultimate apostate.
And coming back to this Pauline year, do you hope that it will make people rediscover this figure of St. Paul, perhaps correct some of their misconceptions about this figure? What are you hoping will emerge during this Pauline year?
What I hope is that it will inspire people to study, to read Paul, not as individuals, but as members of a group. I don't believe that Bible groups are a pooling of ignorance. What I think happens, if it's done prayerfully, is that the biases cancel each other out, and so that one arrives at the historical truth. So I would like a group, very diverse, male, female, right-wing, left-wing, read Paul together and thrash out what they get from him. And that, I think, would be the most vital way of appreciating the extraordinary quality of the great apostle.
Finally, what do you think, if you had to single out one thing among so many, is St. Paul's most important lasting legacy today?
Paul's most last important legacy to me is his idealism. Even though he knew he never measured up to the ideal that he professed, he never watered down that ideal to make himself feel comfortable. He knew he wasn't perfect, Philippians chapter 3. But all today in our modern theology, we create a theology that makes us feel comfortable. Paul would repudiate that completely.
I was speaking there to Father Jerome Murphy O'Connor, a New Testament professor and author of several books on St. Paul.